track session number 9434, reel 2.
Mr. Bill Collins, reel 2. We were talking about the conditions of service in McGregor Barracks before the war started. What about kit inspections, Stuart? Did you?
Yes, sir. We had regular kit inspections. Everything had to be laid out in front of the bed on the floor. All socks, brushes, everything, and they were particular about the condition of the kit. There was no. Nothing second rate about those. They had to be first class.
Would any of the pieces of your kit go missing, or was there any problem with?
Well, if there was, we used to get them replaced. Of course, we could get replacements at cost. You see, on payment, we could get replacements.
There was no stealing between.
Very little. I don't remember ever remember anything like that in my barrack room anyway.
What about the food? What meals would you get in a day?
Well, we used to have breakfast. First of all, we were up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we had a cup of coffee, which was not terribly good, and then out on the square for a little bit of drill, you see, and then back into the barrack room for breakfast, which usually consists of fish, not always of the best quality. I think they were testing us for war conditions, and at midday the meal was all right. The midday meal was all right, except that the beef. I always remembered the beef. When it was beef, it was very tough.
Would it be stews usually?
No, roasted. It was always roast.
And what sort of vegetables would you have?
Well, we used to have, you know, potatoes and cabbage as a rule. Those were the two vegetables.
And then what was your next meal?
Next meal was tea in the afternoon, bread and butter and tea. And that was the end of the feed for the day. But we used to supplement those meals with a visit to the canteen, where the most popular dish was bacon and tomatoes. We used to stuff ourselves with bacon and tomatoes in the company canteen about 6 o'clock in the evening, up past six.
What else did the canteen sell? Did they have a
they sold buns, you know, but we used to call them wads. No soldier ever called a bun. He was a wad. Something for stuffing down the barrels of rifles. And they weren't terribly good, but they were eatable.
Well, what else? Did the canteen serve beer, or was it just a dry canteen?
Oh, no, it was a dry canteen. There was a separate wet canteen where they sold beer. It's quite separate from the dry canteen. Two separate canteens. You see, that was very useful, because not all of the troop soldiers wanted to drink beer.
Well, did you drink yourself?
No, I never drank at all. Never drank a drop.
What would how long would the dry canteen stay open?
Oh, it was open be open till about 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock at night, six to eight.
What would soldiers do while they were in there?
And then, of course, what they did was in Aldershot there was the Smith Dorrien Soldiers Home, where there were all sorts of games, billiards, everything under the sun, where the man could go if he wanted to. You see.
Could you go there?
I used to visit the soldiers. Yes, visit there and played billiards there, and there was plenty of to do. But you see, you must remember that most of the time spent by recruits in the depot was in study, and you'd find most of the troops in the barrack room studying for the what they were doing. We had to sit for certificates of education. There was the third class, the second class, and the first class, and each soldier had to pass. He passed the third class, I passed the third, and then I passed the second, but there was no time to go for the first because the war broke out, you see.
What sort of subjects were covered in this?
Well, all sorts of the usual 3 R's, you know, and first class certificate there was map reading, and all sorts of things like that, you know, of necessity, which go to the makeup of a good soldier.
Did you? What? We were talking about the food before. Did you have enough food?
There was enough, provided you could supplement it at the canteen. I didn't consider it really enough without getting a bit of the extra at the canteen.
Could you always afford that?
I had probably an extra good appetite.
Could you always afford that? I'm thinking of your pay.
The pay was a shilling a day, and we were deducted National Health Insurance, and barrack stoppages. We used to get at six shillings of the 7 shillings, and of course bacon and tomatoes in the canteen was very cheap, about fourpence to sixpence.
So you had enough usually.
I had enough. Yes, no question about that. We had enough.
What else would you spend your money on?
Well, there was very little left after you'd paid, for food, etc. And there was nothing, very little to spend it on. You see, I hardly ever went down into the town, Aldershot town. Some of the recruits used to get into their best dress and go down there. And of course, we had the usual few drunks that came in late on Saturday night.
How did you cope with that?
I was on the double stop. We coped. They used to come in late to the guard room. They used to come in late, some of them, and some of them were in a bit tipsy. And on the odd occasion, of course, one or two were violent, you see.
We'll come to the police side of it later, yeah. I think. How did you react to the army lifestyle? I'm thinking of the lack of privacy and the discipline. Did you take to that easily?
Yes, I found no difficulty in taking to that.
Even the lack of privacy?
Even the lack of privacy, no. No, none whatever.
It didn't affect you at all?
No, none whatever, no. After all, that was part of the training, you see.
How did you get on with the other people in the training group, and later on, really, when you were in A Company? What was your relationship like with them? Did you fit in easily?
What, with the other men in the barrack room?
The other privates?
Oh, yes, in the class, yes. We all fitted in. We were all very, very, very matey, so to speak, you know. There was always a good atmosphere in that class, always, among the men, you see.
There was no bullying?
No, none whatever, no. Not the slightest hint of it.
What was the origin of most of the people? Were there any from higher backgrounds or more privileged backgrounds?
Yes, there's no doubt about that. Some of them were more privileged backgrounds, and of course there were some whose fathers or uncles or relatives were in the Royal Army Medical Corps, such as Frank Osborne, who was a bugler, and his brother, a younger brother, who was also a bugler there when in my time. And I believe they were sons of former Royal Army Medical Corps men.
They were footballers, weren't they?
No, both of them. They both played for England. Well, Tottenham Hotspur and Fulham, Frank Osborne, and his brother played for Leicester City.
Were they rather hero-worshipped by the rest of the group? Or?
No. You see, the depot... it was called RAMC Aldershot, which included the Cambridge Hospital staff, you see. The two combined provided one of the best amateur football teams in Britain. You see, they got to the semi-final of the Amateur Cup, and there were some absolutely first-class players in it, some of whom went to first division clubs after the war.
Did you play football?
No. No.
Did you enjoy it?
I used to enjoy it. I used to kick around on the practice grounds, but I was never good enough to play.
So the relationship between the ordinary men was very, very good, you say. How did you get on with the NCOs and the instructors? What did you?
The only NCOs we came into constant contact with were the lance corporals in the barrack room. And, of course, they were, as a rule, very good chaps, except if you put a foot wrong, they were very quick to slap you down. For instance, one night I went over into C Company to see some friends there, and I took my greatcoat with me, because at 9 o'clock that night there was the Lance Corporal had ordered a roll coat inspection. I don't know whether you know what a roll coat is.
No.
You know, well, a roll coat, you laid the greatcoat on the floor, folded it, and then rolled it over and over and over, and slipped it over your shoulder like a bandolier. Have you seen pictures of soldiers in the old prints with a coat slung over their shoulders? Well, that's how we carried our greatcoats in peace and war, you see, when not being worn. And I took my coat with me as I was over there, and I had it rolled. Some help to roll it on the floor of C Company's barrack room, and I took it back to A Company, and the Lance Corporal spotted me bringing it in, and he said that was a breach of esprit de corps. You know, in other words, you should only have your coat rolled among your mates in your own barrack room. And I had to parade with a roll coat for 3 nights in succession because I'd had it rolled in another company's barrack room. Esprit de corps is very important, he said.
It sounds like you didn't have any serious problems.
No problems, no. No problem. It was a very, very, as far as I'm concerned, it was a very happy depot and a very happy experience.
The actual instructors, it sounds like you respected their knowledge.
Absolutely. They were first class. I mean, Sergeant Partridge was a first class demonstrator with the blackboard, you know, on the bones and the arteries and the nerves of the body, and absolutely first class. If a man couldn't understand that, he couldn't understand anything.
Did you have much contact with your officers?
Yes, of course. Captain Locke was the company officer. He was seen regularly. And Captain Benson in the classroom. And, of course, on parade, the adjutant used to take the parade every month. The general parade was Major Davidson. And those three were officers I saw every day of my life.
What did you think of these officers?
First class. Absolutely first class. I always used to, when I was out in France, I served with some first class officers, but I always remembered the depot officers as being ideal for their job. They taught us.
What was so ideal about them?
Major Davidson was a strict disciplinarian. I remember one day when we had a new sergeant major came on parade. The old one had retired, and the first thing, of course, the sergeant major stood apart, the regimental sergeant major on the parade, and Captain Major Davidson came down towards him. He looked at him, inspected him as if he was inspecting a recruit, as it was his first parade with us, you see, and he looked him up and down, looked at his boots, and he pointed at them. He was wearing officers' boots. He made them change them to soldiers' boots. That's how strict a disciplinarian he was, and fair, you see. Made no deviations in the depot. You were absolutely right on the dot.
So that was one quality. What other qualities did they have?
Well, they were. You could ask a question. You know, if you saw them. I used to ask questions of Major Captain Benson. Always answered them courteously and realizing that you were after knowledge. You see.
So you didn't have to go through an NCO to speak to them.
Not always, no. Not always, no. As a rule, because I did, at the time I used to see Captain Benson more often than not when I was on a railway platform, you know, when I was travelling up to London on a weekend, 48 hours leave.
So are there any other qualities you can bring to mind that they had?
Just quiet and gentlemanly, and I always thought they were.
When you say gentlemanly, did you feel they were like apart from you, in the sense of they were from a different class?
I felt that they were the Latin phrase in loco parentis. That was the best description. They were looked upon us as their charges, to be looked after.
So there was a sort of paternalistic
yes,
feeling.
Very much so. Very much so.
They were actually popular then, wasn't
they? Very popular, yes. Very popular.
Was this just you, or was this general throughout the...
I think it was general throughout the depot.
Right. You mentioned your leaves. How often would you go on these 48-hour leaves?
When you joined up the army, joined the RAMC, you didn't get a day's leave until you'd been there 3 months. The first time I got leave, after I joined on the 1st of October, was for Christmas. That was 3 months later. And I had 3 days leave. 3 days leave at Christmas, and I went home, and I went to Kempton Park race meeting. I remember enjoyed that. I was always fond of horses, you see. As a young boy, I used to go into the stables in Croydon, the Hackney and Hunting stables, with my schoolboy friend, and who went to France as a jockey, and I was always fond of them. So I loved to go racing. Every opportunity I got for leave from Aldershot, I used to go racing on the Saturday.
Was your interest purely in the horses, or did you gamble as
well? Well, I only had a shilling on in something like that, just for fun, you know. I was not a gambler.
What else would you do on your leaves?
Nothing much. We used to come up to Waterloo from Aldershot by the midday train from Aldershot, the 12 o'clock, and book in at the Union Jack Club, and it cost a shilling a night to stay there, including breakfast the next morning. A shilling, that's all. So it was just right. You see, you came up on the Saturday, stayed the Saturday night, went to the racing, stayed the Saturday night, had a walk around on Sunday, and caught the 9 o'clock train back from Waterloo to Aldershot on Sunday night to be in barracks by 11, you see.
I've heard of the Union Jack Club, I know it's near the museum, of course. What sort of accommodation did it provide for soldiers?
Oh, very good. Good bed and a good breakfast. And you could have an evening meal there very cheap.
Was it single rooms or...?
No, I can't remember whether it was single or wasn't it, but I know it was a very good bed. I stayed there.
Would you visit your parents much?
Yes, I used to visit every time I came on leave. But you see, my home, my parents' home, was small, and there were four other children, and really there was no room for me. I was the eldest. I'd outgrown the family and outgrown the home.
How would your parents felt? I should have covered this earlier, but yep. How would your parents felt when you signed up for the army?
No, they just. I think they were quite pleased to know that I'd got somewhere where the family had interest, because my father's brother, you see, he was an old corps man when it was the medical staff corps in the Boer War, and he was quite pleased to think that I'd sort of got a settled career.
What about the army's reputation before the war? Was it seen as a place where ne'er-do-wells ended up, or was the Royal Army Medical Corps seen as better?
The Royal Army Medical Corps, in my opinion, was an exception to the average infantry battalion. The fact that they wrote for my character to my previous employer tells you that they were not interested in taking any Tom, Dick and Harry, you see. But I think the infantry, some of them were a very tough bunch. For instance, at the foot of the hill, down from as we go into Aldershot from MacGregor Barracks, there were the 1st King's Liverpool Regiment, and Liverpool Irish, and believe me, a tougher bunch. Never walked this face of this earth. I mean, they were absolutely magnificent soldiers, but they were very tough men. We used to walk the other side of the road when we got men. I used to always walk the opposite side of the road when I passed the King's Barracks. They were very tough lads, they were. But what soldiers? What soldiers?
So your parents didn't mind so much because of the reputation. You talked earlier about esprit de corps. You obviously had a lot of that even before the war.
Yes. When our football team played away, if had an important match away, we used to, 40 or 50 of us used to go down to see them play and watch and pay the train fare to see them play. Oh, there was a lot of esprit de corps there.
Was the esprit de corps to the company, the A company, or to the depot? Or was it to the RAMC generally?
I think it was to the RAMC generally. You see, we were taught... When I joined, one of the first things that happened was that Captain Locke explained our cap badge to us. You see? The first thing was he drew the cap badge and said that this is your cap badge. And in the there's a Latin motto at the foot. In arduis fidelis, faithful in difficulties. That's the translation from the Latin. And it's that's the esprit de corps. In arduis fidelis, faithful in difficulties. In other words, you were there to look after other people and to be faithful to them. That's why that used to drum itself into me on the battlefield. I used to say to myself very often, boy, you've got to live up to your cap badge. That's what you've got to live up to. No matter how afraid you are, you've got to live up to your cap badge. And it helped.
Well, we talked a bit about recreations on and off. Well, what other recreations did you have besides watching football and your leave passes? Did you indulge in any other?
No. It was quite sufficient. I mean, the routine at the depot, and studying, and getting the little pass at the weekend was quite sufficient. I had nothing else. Mind you, I'd had all the physical training beforehand. You see, in the first 6 months, I'd had all the physical training that a man could wish to have. I was fighting fit when I finished the physical training under Corporal of the Highland Light Infantry, our Swedish drill instructor. Oh, we used to walk tree trunks, you know, simulated difficulties, countryside difficulties. Used to have to walk along a narrow tree trunk. A lot of the things which they do today, the tests they do today.
What about the local civilians? How did you get on with them?
Well, we hardly ever saw them, you see. Aldershot was a garrison, and to get into the part of the garrison where the MacGregor barracks was situated, a civilian had to have a pass. The man who sold newspapers had to have a pass. Anyone who visited, any tradesman had to have a pass. We only saw them when we went down into the town, and to go into the town, you couldn't go down in khaki. You had to put your full dress on to go into the town. Outside the barracks, full dress.
What was your reception in town in full dress?
Oh, quite good. I thought it was a very fine town, Aldershot, nice and quiet, and never saw a disturbance of any kind.
Now, you when about were you posted to the A Company Red Caps?
It was the Depot Red Caps.
The Depot Red Caps. Mm. Well, do you remember the month that happened?
April, I think. April 1914.
So, why do you think you'd been selected as a Red Cap?
Well, I think the reason was I came out top of that simulated exercise on the square, which gave the company prestige. And gave the depot prestige, you see, because we were in competition with the Cambridge Hospital staff, the trained staff, and also because my physique was good, I was broad-shouldered and strong, you see, and quite frankly, the company staff sergeant and his wife, they took a liking to me. They you know, Wet Robbo, he took a liking to me, and they thought, well, I'll keep this young man on the depot. It's not A Company's police, it was the depot police, the whole depot.
How were the depot police organised?
Well, we had a guard room, and the sergeant in charge was Sergeant Russell, who for some unexplained reason, I never could get deciphered, was called Jim Fish. Everyone knows why everyone in the depot called him Jim Fish, but very helpful and very, very, very pleasant. As a matter of fact, I owe the fact to him that when the war broke out, and I was still a private, I owe the fact to him that I went out and passed for corporal on the square drilling. I did my drill on the square for the corporal's examination because he insisted that I went and did it. And that's how good he was to me.
So you had this Sergeant Russell, he was in charge of the guard.
He was a provost sergeant.
How many were there of you?
There were six. Six. We used to do 8 hours on, 4 hours on, and 8 hours off.
Every day?
Yeah.
What exactly were your duties then?
Well, our duties were to look after the guardroom and to parade around the barracks and make sure everything was, you know, there was no disorder, and to turn on the switch on the light. Funny thing, every dusk to switch on the lights in the married quarters. We were in charge of the switch. We had to switch it on. And one day I forgot to do it until about 10 minutes after dusk, and didn't the sergeant major come after me? But he was very good. He didn't put me on a charge or anything like that. He just forgave me because I was a bit late.
What sort of indiscipline might you have to deal with in the camp?
Mainly Saturday nights, when the one or two drunks came in from the town.
What was your attitude to them? Was it sympathetic or hard?
They were put on a charge immediately, you see, if they were late. They had to appear in front of the company officer next day. And if they were violent, they were put in a cell. And once or twice, we had one or two very violent ones, we had to put them in the cell. And, of course, in the struggle, they got knocked about a bit. You see, they were lashing out, and, of course, they had to be dealt with. But the criticism at the hearing the next day was always against the police and not against the chap that caused the trouble. We criticised for knocking him about, you see.
So sometimes you'd actually have trouble restraining a prisoner?
Yeah, very rarely, but now and again it did happen.
What would their sentence be for that sort of...
Well, they would get what was called confined to barracks, mainly. 14 days or perhaps 3 weeks, 6 weeks confined to barracks. In other words, they couldn't go out of barracks.
Who would put...
And they would be given fatigues to do. What we call fatigue. You know what fatigue is, don't you? They were given fatigues to do. Dirty, all the worst jobs in the barrack, round the barracks, after they finished their ordinary day's work.
Well, can you go through some of those jobs, just in case?
Well, emptying the rubbish bins and things like that, you know, all the sweeping up and sweeping around, cleaning around.
When you say, did you have the power to put someone on a charge?
No,